You are listening to the Wild Soul Podcast, a podcast for the wild ones. Join me, your host, Queen Namaste, as we embark on a journey to find our true north and our own unique path. From wild, inspired conversations to searching for life's hidden gems and meanings with a little dash of crazy in between. Because really, who doesn't want to dance to the beat of their own drum? Everybody, happy Wednesday. Thank you for joining me on this week's episode of the Wild Soul Podcast. Before I get into today's episode, I just wanted to thank every single one of you who has either rated, reviewed, and or subscribed to this podcast. It is actually just so amazing that you would take time out of your day to do that for the podcast, because ratings and reviews really help new podcasts get off the ground and allow more people to hear. So I decided to do a little contest here. From now until the end of the month of January, if you send me a screenshot of your review or subscription or both, you'll be entered into a draw for $50. It's pretty easy, $50 if you ask me. So if you've already subscribed or reviewed, totally cool. Just go back to your review, screenshot it, and send it to my email at shannonpetersfitness@gmail.com. So you guys have till about December, January 31st, and I will announce a winner the following Wednesday. So whoop whoop, thank you very much. Just me giving back to all of you. So again, appreciate it. Thank you. We're gonna get into this episode in a couple seconds. Just wanted to introduce my girl Karen. She is a boss ass bitch in the most amazing way. Her story is incredible. She has hit rock bottom so many times throughout her life, and now has just risen out of the ashes into this beautiful yoga goddess, and she's just making a huge impact on the world, and she has just an amazing story. So I hope you guys will take time and listen to it. Her story has a lot to do with addiction, and if you guys are curious, or maybe you are struggling with addiction of some sort, this is a really great episode to listen to. I learned a lot from it, and it's just really humbling. Sometimes we get so caught up in our own little shit when really it could be so much worse, and there's always something to be grateful for in our life, no matter how shitty it may seem right now. So get ready to listen to Karen Peterson share her story here. This was recorded back in November of 2018. Let's just put it on. Without further ado, let's go.
Hi.
Karen in the house.
Whoop, whoop.
What's up, Karen?
Not much.
Thank you for joining me today. It's kind of weird. Just talking into the microphone. Pretend it's not here and we're just chatting.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. We'll just get right into it. Karen, for those of you, or I guess for those people that don't know you, if you had to give an elevator pitch on who Karen is, go.
I don't even know what an elevator pitch is, so like, uneducated. I'm a 40-year-old business owner, yoga and fitness instructor, and I'm in recovery from addiction and alcoholism. I'm a mother and a twin, and I love Jesus.
Oh my god, so many good things. That was funny. That was really good. Perfect. Right. I invited you on here just because the moment I met you, I thought you were just badass and awesome, and I just love you. And other people should know who you are and what you do. So this is just an hour or less. I don't know how long this will be. Whatever. We can just chit-chat, and you can talk about yourself the whole time.
All right. I'm into that.
Okay.
I like it.
We should just start at the very beginning. Okay. We can tell people how we met later, but, like, just, like, your story, because I just think it's
okay. Cool. Yeah.
Just start from the beginning, wherever you want to start.
All right. Go. So my life was really good until I turned 2. We won't go that far back.
Do you remember when you were 2?
Yeah, I
do. You
do? Yeah, I do. I do.
Oh, wow.
I do.
What happened when you were 2?
Oh, just like the beginning of feeling not good enough and just not worthy and just kind of like not wanted. And you know, and I must say, like, some of those, you know, looking back, I think that I always felt uniquely different, even though I was an identical twin. I always felt different. I always felt like I didn't fit in. I just always felt like I was on the outside of everything looking in and never a part of. That's how I grew up feeling. And so, you know, at 11, I discovered something that would become my solution and my problem. And it was alcohol. And I drank for the first time to get drunk. And I can remember the feeling of, you know, the alcohol, like from the tip of my head to my toes, you know, that warm, fuzzy, comforting, softer, easier way. And that was alcohol. And I loved the effect. I loved that it made me not feel, well, it did make me feel prettier, wittier, tittier, and more funny. But yeah, I was instantly loving alcohol, and so was my sister, and, you know, we would drink as often as possible, and, you know, that would kind of carry on for many years as the solution to not feel, to numb out, to escape from reality. And, you know, shortly after that, I found drugs, and then people always say, like, oh, what was your drug of choice? And for me, it wasn't a choice, for one, and it was always more, like, more of whatever you have, anything you got, I'll take it all. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that kind of went on for my whole life, really, but I managed to keep things under control. I had jobs, I waitressed in really high-end restaurants, and it was a good place to hide my alcoholism, and I could get away with a lot of things in that workplace. And eventually it just came to the point where I was, like, unemployable because of my alcoholism, my drug addiction. And, I mean, I can really think about when I first knew that I was alcoholic, like, when I really knew that I was, you know, like, this is, I lived all over. I lived in Australia. I was married to an Australian. Anyway, that just turned into total chaos. But basically, I lived in North Van, and I had the same beer and wine store, Sailor Hagar's. I went there every day, you know, for years. And one day, like, after my usual, like, 3 to 5 days of, like, cracking out, I had no more booze, and, you know, alcohol was, like, my master. I'd do anything for alcohol, and I was desperate. I was at that total jumping off place where I was, like, super messed up, but, like, needing the alcohol, your body's so addicted to it, and your mind, right? It's just a really a disease that's centered in your mind, and it's the only disease that lies to you in your own voice. So, you know, I'm like, oh my god, I have no money. I started, like, scrounging around my house. I got enough change to, like, get a Mickey of vodka, and I put it in, like, this little tea tin, because I didn't, you know, I'm like, okay, just put it in this tea tin, gather it up, and I'm, like, by myself. You know, that's how I always did my best partying. All alone, right? Crittering around my house, getting paranoid, partying, you know. But anyway, and so I gathered it up, and I'm like, put my shades on, put my baseball hat on, you know, it's like 11 a.m. I'm like, hey, the liquor store, beer store's open. I'm gonna make my way there. Of course.
So were you already drunk when you were doing this?
Well, I was, like, more, like, messed up, like, still in that sort of, like, up for 3 days, just, okay, like, but I had no more booze and needed that. And so I started walking to the store, and there's the corner store there, and this, like, guy that worked there, he knew me and stuff. I went in there first because I wanted to change the change into a $10 bill, because I was embarrassed and didn't want to go to the liquor store with change. Like, a classic alcoholic, like, oh, well, I got to make myself look somewhat normal. Yeah. So I like laid all the change out and he was like, no, I will not give to you. I'm not giving to you. I know what you do with this. And I'm like, no, like literally I'm getting a cab. I can't have change. I need a $10 bill. And people are like trickling into the store and I'm like sweating and I'm like, oh, he wouldn't do it. So I'm like, fuck, I'm losing my stuff. Gather up my change, put it back in the tin. I'm like, fine, I just have to go to the liquor store like this. This is crazy. Okay, but you got to get the booze. You got to get it. So I got to Sailor Hager's, like my classic beer and wine store. I opened the door and like walked in and the guy was like, you can't be in here. And I was like, pardon me? He's like, you are banned for life from here. I was like, what? What in the? And he was like, you don't remember last night? I'm like, what? Last night? No. He's like, you walked in here and just started walking down the aisles, opening bottles and slamming them in the aisles. We kicked you out and banned you for life. And I was like, oh my God, right? Like I had no recollection whatsoever of that. None. Whoa. So I'm like, obviously I have a problem. But, you know, that didn't stop me. I just, what was like the most appropriate thing in my mind to do was I moved. I moved to East Van. I moved to a,
from
you
North
know,
Van to East
yeah,
Van.
To like, to slip into like a community where, you know, I felt like I wouldn't be looked at like I was better than. And so I could get, you know, I could go out of the house as many times as I wanted to meet the dealer and nobody would judge. I could go to the liquor store or I could do whatever. And I would slip in not realizing that really, in fact, I was the lower companion. I had become this lower person and I was just moving myself into an environment that fit. Right. And, you know, on and on it went really. But, you know, that wasn't enough for me. I had a small daughter and, you know, I'd take her to the beer store many times in the day and she definitely knew what that brown paper bag was. She knew it. She was just a toddler, but she knew. And I can remember going to that beer and wine store and, you know, she's like holding my hand and we go in there and I had enough money to get my Mickey, a vodka. And there was like this plate with little pre-made sandwiches, saran wrap sandwiches on this plate. And she was like tugging on me and she's like, Mom, like pointing and she's telling me she's so hungry, right? And I probably didn't even feed her. I don't even know when I fed her, right? Like, I'm just such a selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, self-absorbed alcoholic, right? And alcohol is everything. And I can remember like looking at her and then looking at the counter, and behind the counter was this big, huge wall mirror. And I remember looking at this woman staring back at me, right? This disgusting, gross, like, just pathetic drunk mother, and it was me, right? And I can just remember thinking like, you piece of shit. And I went ahead and bought the booze and didn't get her food, right? Like, that's just my disease. That's my disease. That's what it does to me. I just don't care about anything, and I'll do whatever it takes to feed my habit. And
wow, so when, sorry to interrupt,
yeah,
there's so much stuff you said there. When you, was that Presley?
Yeah.
So when you were you a single mom then? Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
How was that? Like,
well, it was whatever her dad, he tried to kill me. So that's just a whole nother thing.
Jesus.
He had his own addiction. He was addicted to crystal meth and he was super violent. And, you know, we had some horrific times together. But that's the thing too, is that I stayed longer than I should have because I was in my addiction and I needed like a roof over my head. And I couldn't do anything on my own. I couldn't pay bills. I couldn't even fill out simple forms. Like, my brain was like wet and I couldn't even figure out how to put a duvet cover on.
And you were a mom at this point?
Were you
pregnant and using at the same
time? No, I never used. Like, I was pregnant before this too. I have a son that I gave up for adoption when I was 20, and I never drank or used with him, but as soon as I had him and left the hospital, I got right back into it. Mm-hmm. And then I had a daughter that passed away in 2004 from a brain abnormality, and then Presley's pregnancy, I never drank or used. Like, it was the only time in my life that I could have like a, you know, multiple months of sobriety, but it wasn't like sobriety. It was just like white knuckling it till I had the baby, right? Like, I always knew that I was going to go back to the lifestyle that I was accustomed to because it had been so many years. I never pictured my life without drugs and alcohol. It was never something that I could ever envision. I just knew that I was going to live and die that way. And you know, it was truly like dying with my eyes open. I really didn't care about anything or anyone. And I was miserable and I was angry and I hated life. And I can remember looking at regular people, whether it was like the gas station attendant or the Starbucks barista or a family walking down the street, and just feeling like, why can't I just be happy? Like, why can't I be like them? They seem so normal and so content, like, you know, but I couldn't picture getting help for my, you know, for my addiction. And it was just like day on, like into years of just getting it, using it, coming off it and getting more. And it was with my twin sister the whole time. And she had a daughter the same age as my daughter. So they kind of raised each other and they just lived alongside our destruction, right? Like we did some horrible things to each other in front of the kids. It was absolutely insane. But just that kind of chaotic living. Me and my sister did actually go into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous in 2011. And we went into the rooms, you know, because we thought we had a problem with cocaine. We didn't think we had a problem with the alcohol. We were like, no, I got to get off the cocaine. And we were messed. We'd go in there with like vitamin water bottles full of vodka and just like a touch of juice. And I'm sure they knew we were, you know, messed up. Like, I'm like, I did some of my best sharing at those meetings. Right? Like, just like, and anyway, this woman came up to us and she handed my sister a big book. It was like, I think you need to look at the other program. And my sister's like, what? No, we don't have a problem with alcohol. Like, we got a problem with cocaine. And, you know, lo and behold, obviously we didn't last in the rooms. We just weren't ready. So we just went out, stayed out, never did anything to get help. And then basically for me, you know, it went on like that for years until I was 34 years old. I basically had lost everything. I had nothing. I sold everything of any value. But like the things that I lost the most, not even the material things, because I literally had nothing. And it was like my dignity, my self-respect, my self-worth. Like I just wanted to die, and I just couldn't die. Like I wanted to die, but I was too afraid to die. And I just, you know, I just didn't see any hope whatsoever. I had no hope. And my life was just like ground into dust. I had nothing. And I ended up in the hospital in Kelowna. I was 34 years old, and I had, like I was 98 pounds. I was completely gray because my organs were shutting down. Yeah, I was bones. And I had, jaundice. So my eyes were yellow. I was sick and dying. And basically they had to put me on an alcohol drip to wean my body off alcohol because it was so heavily addicted. I hadn't left. Like I couldn't even be in public at this point. I couldn't even have a shower because, the shower water would hit my skin and it would just be covered in bruises because my organs were shutting down. Yeah, so I stopped showering.
Oh my God.
I had lost my license numerous times. I had DUIs. I had 24 hours. I had, you know, 3-month impounds. I had, like, I just had nothing and no one. I had no one left that, you know, and I lost my daughter. And I blew my life to dust. And basically the doctors in the Kelowna Hospital called my parents to come and say goodbye to me because they didn't think I was going to make it. Yeah, and I kind of came to like 2 days after the hospital and my parents were there. And like, I knew that like the gig was up. I'm like, fuck, like they, even though I'm a grown up, I'm like, they know everything. And mm-hmm. my parents knew I was alcoholic. My whole family knew I was an alcoholic for years, but I don't think they knew about how much drug use I had been, you know, that I was addicted to many things, oxys, perks, Dilaudid, like cocaine and everything else. And it was just, basically they told me that if they released me from the hospital and I went out and continued living the way I was living, that I would maybe last 3 weeks. And they said they could take me to a detox center in Kelowna and that I could try to detox and then maybe treatment. And I said, yes. Right. And it wasn't because I was like, you know, it wasn't because I wanted to live. It's because I didn't want to face my parents and I didn't want to face, like, I was like, just lock me up, man, rubber room me. Like I'm a mess. Right. Oh, like I literally was like, I felt psycho. And I was certainly, you know, malnourished. I hadn't had a period in 5 years because I was so, wow. My body was just, you know, messed. And anyway, they transferred me to this detox center called Crossroads. And yeah, and I don't really remember a lot of it because it was really intense. Like I had medical assisted detox nurses and everything, but I literally like saw the things like crawling on the wall. I had the sweats, my body was cramping up. It was like, you can't imagine that kind of horrific, like it's crazy. Like I was standing in the shower, you know, like both ends throwing up, and it was like, it was insane. And they wouldn't let me have a razor because I was like so heavy into self-harming. I was a huge cutter for years. And I just was like, all of a sudden this degenerate, like, scum that, you know what I mean? Like, I just had wasted my whole life and I in the darkness and just living like a fucking animal. And basically I got like 18 days in there, and then I started to get some clarity, and they transferred me to Abbotsford to a rehab. And yeah, it was there that pretty much everything changed for me. Basically I you know, I was in treatment with 30 other women that were newly sober. Some of them were there because they had to be for, like, they could go there or jail. Some of them were just there to get their kids back. Some women really wanted to be there. I was just on the fence of everything because it was like a brand new world, and I'd never, you know, I'd never made choices. I never, like, it's just crazy. I was all of a sudden having to learn things all over again. And, you know, you have to start your day by making your bed at 6 in the morning and have it checked, and just things that I just let go of doing, just basic human things. And then anyway, I went to this, we got to have an optional night, this Bible study night, and it was like it was outside of the rehab, so you got to go in the methadone van and like leave the property. So I was like, okay, I'll go check that out. Like, you know, I have no relationship with a higher power, you know, I have nothing, like, can remember praying except for to say, like, please don't let me get caught for this illegal activity, right? Like, not knowing who I'm praying to. But I went and listened to this Bible study. I didn't really pick up on anything. My brain was still pretty wet, and I was just kind of floating through motions. But I went back to the treatment center that night, and I went to bed, and I wake up, and it was like sunlight in my room, and I kind of sat up on my cot, and I like swung my legs over the cot. I looked across the room, and it was God, but not like the God like in the Bible, but it was just like this being, and I knew that it was God. And he was knitting, and he's like sitting there knitting with his head down, and I just rose from the bed, and I just started swearing and screaming at him. I was screaming at the top of my lungs, like, all the profanities, all, I won't say them all, but like everything you could think of, I was ripping into this higher power and telling him, you know, like that I was always going to be sick, and then I was going to leave there, and I was going to overdose and die, and then I was never going to get my kid back, and it was all his fault, and, you know, nobody loves me, nobody's cared about me, and I'm just a waste of skin. And like, I just was like going off on him, and nothing would disturb him. He just kept knitting, right? Wow. And then finally he like stopped knitting, and he looked up at me, and he looked me in the eyes, and he was like, oh, my dear child, you're so angry. Do you want me to stop what I'm doing and we can talk about this? And I like looked down at what he was doing. For the first time, I saw what was coming out of his knitting needles was like all of a sudden this beautiful tapestry that was like swirling out of his knitting needles, this fabric, and it was like all these colors, like every color you could ever imagine, and it was spilling out of his needles and like filling the room. And when it came into focus, what he was knitting was my life as a sober person. Like, he was knitting how good of a life I could have and the life he saw for me as a sober woman. And it filled, all of a sudden I felt overwhelmingly peaceful, safe. I felt like everything was going to be okay. And then I woke up for a second time. So it's like that was my spiritual awakening. Basically, I can only describe it as a spiritual smackdown that was like, listen, you know, you want to live or you want to die. You want to get this program or you don't, right? And it changed everything for me. I was like, okay, I got this. I want this. I want to live. I worked on my program there. Like, I was like, you know, it's super keener, like Captain Recovery, like, look at me, I'm the good girl, I'll never get any trouble, not get strikes. I just basically changed my whole way of thinking and had a higher power. And then I got out of treatment and moved to Bridge Lake, like way out in the Caribou in the middle of nowhere.
Bridge Lake.
Yeah, like far. It's like an hour and a half from 100 Mile.
Oh, Jesus.
And it's way, like, there's nothing.
Why did you move there?
Because the guy that I was with, of course, right? He moved us there.
Where did you meet this guy? Where did you jump into things? Hold on. So you get you have this spiritual awakening,
yeah,
and you get out of rehab.
I was already with him before in my addiction.
Oh, okay, so he was like still addicted and shit.
Yeah, he's like multiple husbands past where we were. Like, he's my third. Anyway, and yeah, I like to make a lot of bad decisions when I'm drinking.
Everybody does.
Yeah. So anyway, but yeah, we were living there, and I was like doing so good. I got my kid back, and I got my license back, and I got a job, and I was just killing it. I was happy for the first time in my life, and I was working this program. I had a fellowship. I had friends. I had everything, right? It was amazing. And then I my disease, you know, like it started telling me that I probably wasn't an alcoholic and I probably, you know, I probably don't need the program and I probably don't need the fellowship and I don't need AA and look at how good I'm doing. So I just kind of like took on a lot of work, right? All of a sudden I was like, money. And basically I got 13 months clean and sober. And I got 13 months and I, you know, like I was like, whatever, like I think I probably deserve a drink because I just went 13 months without anything after 20 years of drinking and using. I'm like, I probably
pour
myself a little vodka. So I legit poured like I was at my job, which was at a restaurant. Right. And I went to the back and I poured about a tumbler of vodka. And at the end of my disease,
a couple shots.
Maybe four shots, yeah. But like at the end of my addiction, I was drinking 60 pounders of vodka straight.
Shut up.
Burned a hole in my esophagus, but I could drink, right? Because I was doing a ton of drugs,
too. Well, yeah, because you would just build up a tolerance.
Yeah.
Holy fuck, dude.
60s of vodka, no problem.
Like, without Chase?
I never used Chase. I never used Mix. I drank it straight out of the bottle. Warm, cold, didn't matter. Yeah. I did a lot of internal damage to my organs, my esophagus, my teeth, everything.
The body's amazing. Yeah. Because you look fucking good. Like, I would have never thought, I have invested, had to invest
in some Botox and some things, right? To not look like what I went through. That would be terrifying. But yeah, basically, I poured this little cup of vodka and I drank it back and I'm thinking like whatever, but you know what, the disease is progressive and my disease was growing at a rampant pace even though I had, you know, sobered up. And I drank it and within like 20 minutes I blacked out. I walked out of my job and got in my car and it was about an hour and 20 minute drive back to Bridge Lake, and I made it to Inner Lakes. Basically I made it to about 25 more minutes till my house, and I freaking hit a family of five in a blackout, and basically I just remember
a blackout. Like, you don't remember it?
No, like I don't remember leaving my work. I remember drinking the vodka and that's it. I don't remember. I woke, yeah. I basically came to with the windshield smashing in, the glass blowing in, and my car upside down in a ditch, and people screaming, and I could hear other people screaming, like, it was crazy. And then I heard sirens and I got arrested, right? And I lost my license. My car was a total write-off. And of course I was drunk driving, so it was zero. You're not getting any money for that car.
And you had to go to jail for that? Was everyone okay in the car, the family?
Well, they were injured, but that's a whole nother show. Like, I got sued. Oh my God.
A whole nother show.
There's not even enough words to explain like the consequences of that decision. And you know, today though, I mean, that was a long time ago, right? Like, I have, you know, over 4 years of continued sobriety today. But the point is that experience, that relapse, was what I needed. Like, I'm grateful for that relapse now. It's a huge part of my story, and it's a huge part of a lot of people's story is relapse. But the thing is, for me, it was the reminder that my higher power was telling me that, listen, lady, you are a woman that cannot take one drink. You cannot put alcohol in your system, right? Like, and next time it'll be lights out. Like, I'm lucky that nobody died, and I'm lucky that I didn't, you know, die. But yeah, it was just like, your disease is always going to tell you that you're okay, right? And you're not. But anyway, that being said, I got back on track. My twin sister, like, greyhound me back out to Vancouver, and she took me to two meetings a day. She was recently, like, newly sober at the time. And she got me back on track, and I, you know, I'm forever grateful for that. And I haven't looked back since. Like, I have zero desire to test the waters, because I just know that those are my kind of consequences. Like, it's not just like, oh, have a couple drinks and get away with it, go into bed, nobody will know. No, my shit's like, hit people, crash cars, and get arrested. Like, that's the story of my life. So, yeah, anyway, basically after that, you know, that marriage fell apart, and you know, I left with my daughter and nothing, like not a fork, not a plate, nothing. And I moved in with my sponsor and my kid. And I, you know, I went to school for my yoga teacher training, where I met Shannon.
Crazy.
Yeah, and we clicked right away.
Yeah, because I wasn't even in, like, the same...
She wasn't in the training.
I was just there working and decided to pop in, I think, just for one day.
Yeah.
And then met you. And
and I went to her classes and nearly died. I was like, whoa. But, yeah, that was a turning point for me, that teacher training. It was exactly what I needed to really know my worth, like, because I spent so many years hating myself. I despised who I was. I vibrated at a level so low that I only attracted scum. I attracted shit people into my life because I felt shit, right? Mm-hmm. And I can't say enough about, like, our thoughts change our reality. And because I despised who I was, I couldn't stand myself. I literally was just utterly, incomprehensibly, like, pitiful on every level. And, you know, and I would fight people. I'd do whatever. I was just a fucking riot, like just a chaotic, turbulent disaster. And I was so angry, right? So it's like, you know, that teacher training taught me how to forgive myself for who I used to be. That it taught me how to level up. It taught me how to be a good human, like, because yoga, the principles in yoga and all the eight limbs in yoga, that they're teaching you how to be a good human. And that's what it comes down to. Like, I didn't know how to be a good friend. I didn't know how to be a good mom. I didn't know how to be a good daughter. I didn't know how to be, you know, I didn't know how to be anything that looked human. And when I was on my yoga mat, those are the only times, and still to this day, that I feel like a whole human being. Like, I feel safe. That's like my magic carpet. Like, that yoga mat takes me to places inside myself and through myself and outside of myself that I couldn't imagine traveling, because I didn't want to know who I was, right? And that program taught me who I am at the real core of who I am. You know, I am a good person that was born of love, and I believe that love is our natural state, and that, mm-hmm. that I embody and exude love now, and that I'm a kind and compassionate human being. But those are the principles I was taught through the fellowship of AA and also through my yoga practice, mm-hmm. right? Because when you're on your mat, you're not behaving like an animal. You're being kind and loving, and you're treating yourself like, that's an act of self-care. I believe that a practice of yoga is an act of compassion to yourself, and that's why you come back to it again and again, mm-hmm. right? Like, for me, returning to the mat is like returning to an altar. That's where I find my peace, my bliss. It's where I thrive, right? And that's where my best ideas come from. And so I just honored that and chased that. And then I graduated, and I went home, and I taught 4.5 months of free yoga in my town, in my community. I taught for free for 4.5 months to gain a following and to show people this beautiful art, like this beautiful science that is yoga. A lot of people in my community weren't familiar with the practice. And so I just gave it away. I gave it away with everything I had. And then I opened up my own yoga studio just over a year ago. And it's crazy. I opened it up, and it's just thriving, and I made amazing connections. I have this beautiful tribe of men and women that are,
Your tribe is dope. I follow you on social media, and it's like, it's always packed.
Yeah.
You guys are always having a good time. It's just like an awesome community, and I've never been there, and I want to so bad.
Yeah, and you were supposed to come out, but then the horrible accident happened.
Yeah, we can talk about that too. Yeah, when you were, like, I don't know if I know this, like, how did you know that yoga teacher training was what you needed to do, or, like, did you already love yourself then, or, like, how did you get into that?
Yeah, because in rehab and treatment, they had a woman come in once a week, and we had to do mandatory yoga, right? Okay. So that's the first time I was introduced to yoga. Like, I never had physical activity, I never played sports, I was too busy using drugs, right? But so that's when I first did yoga. And I remember the first time I was in Savasana, and I was like crying, and I'm like, what the hell, right? Like, this is crazy, but I like it. And just feeling all the feelings, I made that connection. And then when I moved to the Caribou, I do DVDs at my house. There was no, studio or anything, but I do DVDs at my house. I do YouTube. I just loved it. I loved it. And that's when I was like, oh, well, I was working as a shipping manager, and I got laid off. So I went to Horton Ventures to I was on EI, and you can get schooling paid for by WorkBC if you're on EI and you're laid off. So I was like, here's what I want to do. I want to go to yoga school. And they were like, okay, right? Like, so they made me I had to jump through lots of hoops to prove to them that it would be something that I could make a living at. And I had letters written by mental health and people in my community saying that it's a good idea, right? So then I convinced WorkBC to pay for my schooling, and they did. They paid Naked Truth for my entire tuition.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, so that's the kind of community I live in, though. They're, you know, like, it's crazy, right? Yeah. A small town, but you can make big things happen there if you try.
Yeah.
And so that's how that came to be. Like I said, it's saved my life, right? Like, I truly believe that because of my yoga practice, it's so grounding and it's so therapeutic. And then with meditation, that's part of our program, is to, pray and meditate, and it all fits in with my lifestyle. So it was all just like, mm-hmm. It was just really my higher power showing me where I should go and what I should do, and then me taking the action, right? Not sitting around and being like, but it's not happening. Yeah, so you gotta make stuff happen, right? And I did. And now my life is amazing. My life is so good today. And sometimes I just can't even believe that it's my life. Like, I get to go to bed on clean sheets in a warm house, and I can lay my head down at the end of the night with a clean conscience and know that I never harmed or hurt anyone or myself, and that I try to be of service to others and give back to my community and you know, just to show up for people. I just, now people ask me to do something and I do it. I show up for others, right? And that's just something I never did before. Like, I'd sabotage anything in my life. I would sabotage anything that was even, because I didn't believe that I was worth anything. I also was so terrified of what it would look like if I tried something and succeeded, or if I failed. Mm-hmm. It's like a lot of us have that feeling of, like, you know, that, oh, like, we have big dreams, right? We have these huge dreams and we don't put them into action because we feel like, oh, what if I don't make it? But it's like, if you don't try, you don't know. And then I remember, I started having these big dreams about this yoga studio, about creating Blissed Out Yoga and Fitness. And then I'd share these huge, huge dreams with some people that were still around in my, you know, circle, and they would laugh at me. And I'm like, okay, like, I'm making dreams so big that people are fucking laughing at me. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, those aren't my people. Right. So I just shifted into, like, only surrounding myself with people that were like, cool, man, that sounds dope. That sounds hard as fuck, but, you know, it sounds dope. And I just started to set goals, and I grinded. Like, I grinded. I mean, I've been hustling since I was out of the womb. I can hustle like you wouldn't believe. And I just did. Now I just do it in a legal way, right? Like, everything's by the books, but it's still like, I mean, I'll never not be like that East Van girl. I'll never not be, you know, like, I'll always be who I am, and the appreciation that I have for what I do today because of where I came from is a huge part of why I'm successful.
Yeah.
Right. Because I get to show up and be myself, and I get to speak my truth, you know, to people in my community. Anybody that walks in the doors of my studio, like, I thank them. I'm in gratitude to them, because every hour, 1 hour practice that people share with me is another hour guaranteed sobriety for me. That is an hour that I'm not going to be drinking and using. So it's like, they are in turn saving my life. When they walk through those doors and show up for me on their mats, they're saving my life. It's like, I'm going to give them whatever I can.
Wow.
Because I'm so grateful, right? And I didn't even know what grateful meant in my addiction. I wasn't grateful for shit. I didn't know how to be grateful. And today, like, that's all I am, right? I'm happy because I'm grateful, mm-hmm. you know, and life is just such a blessing to me today. I mean, I really do believe that you can do anything. And then now I have an amazing man in my life only because I changed my mindset around relationships, around, like, you know, what would be acceptable in my addiction is no longer acceptable to me. And I have boundaries, and I have the ability to choose. When you're in the disease of addiction, that's the disease of no choice. You have no choice. And today I have choices, and I treat those choices like those are luxuries that I couldn't afford before, right? And today I have choices, and so I make good ones. And
yeah, because I remember when you finished your teacher training or whatever, and you came back for a bit, I don't remember what when exactly it was, but then you were talking about opening up your own studio, yeah. and I was like, oh my god, that's so cool, like, yeah. what the fuck, like, that, I want, so cool, I want to do that. And then you had a, I don't know, was he your husband or was he a boyfriend, and then you were living with him up in the Carpo, weren't
yeah,
you? And
that then, was my last husband.
And then you're like, you know, no, I like, he's gotta go, yeah. he's, I gotta yeah. go, and you came down?
Yeah.
To
Vancouver
for a bit because yeah. you were leaving him,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
yeah, like that 100%. So
and that was another like awakening of growth, right? Because it's like, you know, before for me, like men were a huge part of my survival, right? Like I didn't know what love was. I never was in love. I was in survival mode. Like I needed mm-hmm. somebody to put a roof over my head. I had no like. I was too messed up all the time. I was just wasted all the time. I couldn't do the simplest of things, right? Like the most basic things, I couldn't do them, right? Because my brain was so, so wet. And and I just knew though, like, and he didn't believe in my recovery and he didn't believe in yoga, like the two things that were the most like driving forces in my life, right?
Was he a user?
Yeah, he used, you know, like for sure. He had his own issues.
Like recreational or?
It depends on where he's at really in life, right? Like, I mean, he can go hard or he can, you know, like, but the thing is that it's just, and there was other things like infidelity on his side and abuse and, you know, like just the same old thing that I always put myself in.
Yeah.
Right. But it's like, you know, once you discover that you find your intrinsic self and you start to make your life sacred and treat everything like it's sacred, like even the act of, you know, I don't know, like making your bed, make it sacred, right? Like create a sacred space that's just yours where you honor yourself, right? And so mm-hmm. then I spent this year on my own of, you know, like just rebuilding my life and working on my goals and working on myself. And I, you know, literally manifested like my dream man out of air because I was focused on what I would bring into my life and what would show up for me, the same vibration that I was putting out, yeah. right? And then all of a sudden this man walked into one of my yoga classes and I instantly knew, I was like, that's him, like, thanks God.
Yeah.
You know what
so
I mean?
Cool.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, so like, okay, fast forward, we meet, you graduate, you
yeah.
move up to 100 Mile,
yeah.
you open up the first yoga studio
mm-hmm.
in 100 Mile House,
yeah.
like from where you were to
yeah.
like where you are now.
Yeah.
It's just so cool.
It's crazy.
And I wish I lived up there so I could work for you
Same.
And be a part of your tribe.
Same, but you are part of my tribe.
I know, but you know what I mean.
I wish
like,
so bad.
Like I could see you more and take your classes and chill
well,
with people.
Real
and
estate's
do...
good out there.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
I do and I don't. Yeah, so that's super cool. Okay, you gave a lot of stuff. I'm just like trying to think about what you said. yeah, so I guess what my next question would be is like, do you think it was through AA or like yoga or both or just your experience of like, how did you learn to like love yourself
mm-hmm.
again? Because
yeah,
I feel like
that definitely was a combination of, mm-hmm. of, you know, my program, right? The program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's the steps, right? They're teaching you how to clean up your side of the street, how to right your wrongs and how to amend your life. So those are like the building blocks, right? But yoga, it was the turning factor for loving myself. And I truly believe that you can't be in a relationship and you can't love another human being if you don't love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot, right? And I just, you know, we are not searching for our other half because we're not a half, like we're whole beings on our own, right? And I think that's so key that
yeah,
we think that we need to have a partner or we need to be in a relationship to make us complete. But in fact, we're already complete on our own. And if you can find a person that, you know, like wants to do the same things as you, but still has their own interests in their own life and lets you be you, like never choosing to change someone, will always change and grow and evolve, right? And that's cool. That's great. We never want to stay still and stay stuck, but never believe that you can change a human. You know what I mean? Like
uh-huh.
the biggest need that human beings, like all we need is to be seen and heard, to be truly seen and truly heard, and then to be accepted for exactly who we are. Like, and that's what I make my entire studio about. Like, the vibe in my studio is going to a place where you're celebrated. Don't go to the places where you're merely tolerated. Go mm-hmm. where you're celebrated, where you can show up and drop all the masks and all the pretend and show up as the real, true, authentic you and stand in your own essence and be celebrated for that, right? Amazing. Because there's a lot of stigma around, like, even yoga and who should do it and what yoga mm-hmm. girls look like or guys or whatever else. And it's like, oh, you know, yeah. it's for everybody. You have a body, you do yoga, that's a yoga body. Mm-hmm. End exactly. of story, right? And it's like finding, like, there's no such thing as perfection, only acceptance. And we're here in life to make progress, not to make perfect. We're here to practice and to progress. You know what I mean? And it's like, as soon as you take out that idea that you have to perfect anything, like, we're all just blundering towards love. That's what we're doing, right? We're blundering towards love. And the more that we exude love and the more that that trickles out of us and ripples out into the environment that we're putting it out in, the more love you receive, right? Like, if you can look at anybody, like, if you can see yourself in the eyes of others, you will truly know and see love. You know what I mean? And that's the biggest thing is, like, we need to start looking for the similarities in each other rather than the differences.
Yeah.
100%. We're all recovering from something. Mm-hmm. We all have those days where we feel like our lives don't have meaning or purpose. We all have struggles. Some of us, we wake up and our feet hit the floor and we're struggling.
Yeah.
And we don't know what anybody wakes up to struggle with. So if you show up kind, compassionate, loving, right, to anyone, like, you know, say the lady at the checkout stand is just a right, see you next Tuesday, you know what I mean? And but you take offense to that. That's your reaction. You don't yeah. know what she woke up to. So show her more love, more tolerance, more patience, more understanding. It's like, that's the only way we get it back. And then you float through life like everything's a gift. And as you start treating everything like it's a gift, your life will transform and you'll see the miracles in the mundane. Right? Yes. You'll look for the message in the mess. And that's the biggest part of it. We're going to have messy days, but find the message. Get into the solution. Don't stay in the problem. Yeah. Just, that's it.
Don't stay in the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I guess, would you say, like, that whole accident and stuff kind of, like, was that, like, your rock bottom and it made you...
The me crashing the car? Yeah. That was not my rock bottom, no. My rock bottom was, like... many, like,
years yeah. before.
My rock bottom had a basement. Like, oh. It was, like, there was, like, you know, what some people's rock bottom looks like, you know, I don't know, add, like, psychosis and, like, homelessness and, my rock bottom was a long time before that, but for some reason, like, you don't get it till you're ready to get it.
Right.
Right? So it's, like, even if you were doing the most sickest, most deplorable acts, like, which I was doing insane things, mm-hmm. right? And regular people would look at somebody doing those things and think that that's crazy. Like, they must be certified insane, or that must be their rock bottom. That's got to be as low as they're going to go. No, you'll still find a way to go lower until you're ready to fully surrender. You can't, you have to be so broken, like, you know, you have to want the change, you have to want it as bad as you want the drugs. Like, you know, there's times that I'd walk from Vancouver to Surrey on foot till my feet bled to pick up crack cocaine.
Wow.
Right? So it's like, what kind of lengths will I go to in my sobriety? Right? Somebody wants, like, I sponsor women today, right? So somebody calls me and needs me to go somewhere and needs me to help, you know, I'm there, right? I have a fucking car to drive today. I don't have to walk on bloody feet to go help people. I can drive a car to do it. Like, it's like, whatever you would do in your addiction to get it, to use it, to find it, that search, that hunt, that animalistic living, you have to treat your life like you would go to any lengths to live it. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, you say yes a lot. You say yes a lot. 100%, right? Because when I'm helping others, I'm not in my disease.
Right.
My mind is still super diseased. Like, what I have is an obsession of the mind, right? And an allergy to the body. So when I put something in my system that affects me from the neck up, my body craves more. Mm-hmm. And I can't stop. I have no stop. I'll never stop. So it's like, you know, to understand the disease that I have. What I have is a spiritual malady. That's what I suffer from, a spiritual malady. And when you look up spiritual in the dictionary, it says soul. And when you look up malady, it says sickness. So I have a soul sickness. I have a big hole, an empty void inside me that I want to fill. And mm-hmm. I use the wrong things to fill it, like drugs, alcohol, sex, shopping, TV. Like, I can get addicted to anything, right? Because that I'm trying to stuff and fill that hole. When I, in fact, what I've learned over the multiple years that I've had, you know, recovery is that that is a God-sized hole. Like, I have to have a higher power. I have to believe in something greater than myself to restore me to sanity, right? Because when I'm running the show, when I'm driving the bus, I fucking blow it up. So I have to turn my will and my life over to the care of something else. And I don't care what you call it. I don't care if you call it God, Buddha, Krishna, you call it whatever, great mystery, universe. Yeah. I don't care if you believe in that doorknob more than you believe in yourself, right? Like, you have to have something.
Yeah.
You know, like, and if you're, you know, in that way, like myself, and me having the comfort of knowing that I don't have to be in charge of everything, that I don't have to micromanage anything, that I have a loving creator that looks after me. And you know, yeah, I have to do the footwork for sure. You're not just going to be sober through osmosis. You have to do the work, but it's like, the work is trust God, serve others. Right? So when I'm being of service to others, I'm not in my head. Yeah. When I'm helping someone else, I'm not thinking about my own little poor me, pity pot, selfish me.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have enough of this. I need this. Like, you know, you sit on your pity pot. We all do it.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know, soon enough, you get sick of sitting in your own shit. You'll change your diapers. Right? Like, it's not a good place to be.
So you're funny, your analogies. So yeah, you're just like, you said a couple minutes ago, you're like, don't stay in your own mess or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, so, because you're really inspiring to me, and I'll get into like how you inspired me in a second. But mm-hmm. when I like met you, oh, it's funny. I was like, what the fuck? I'm like, how has this chick not had a drink in 5 years?
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like impossible.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Like,
it's
not
crazy.
That I could, like, not that I would consider myself like an alcoholic or whatever, that I like needed booze, but it's like, it's such a social thing.
Yeah. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. And it's like, oh, if you have a really bad day, like, just sometimes a glass of wine at the end is great. So it's like, there must have been so many goddamn triggers for you
mm-hmm.
during your past, like, 4 or 5 years being sober.
Yeah.
So, like, how do you get through that
without
taking
it? I play the whole tape. That's what I do. Like, if I mean, of course, like, I mean, thankfully, the obsession to use and drink has been removed from me. But the thing is that there's still times I think about sabotaging my life. There's still times that I have bad days or shitty things happen. And I think, oh man, I'd love to just like burn down to the downtown east side, pick up a rock, buy a 60 and just lights out. Of course, I think that at times, right? But what I do is I play the whole tape, right? Like, so what it looked like when I was in my disease, I can remember what it was like. I can remember what it was like to feel that utter lonely suffering. Like, it is the disease of loneliness. Like, where you, that doom and gloom, that heavy hanging darkness that hangs over you, it's that soul sickness. I don't want to feel like that anymore. I don't want to be like that. And I don't want to participate in that. And I know where it takes me. Like, it takes me, you know, to jails, institutions, and death. Right.
Yeah.
So I know that. And for me, I think that, like, for normal people, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. But for drug addicts and alcoholics, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, knowing the fucking result. We know what's going to happen and we do it anyway. That's why people don't get it. Right. They're like, look at your beautiful child. How can you choose drugs over your kid? Hey, listen, if our kids were enough for us to stop using, we'd all have stopped using.
Right.
Right. It's a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that makes no sense unless you're in it.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, for me, like, I have those times that I want to numb out. But instead of, like, you know, picking up, I pick up a book, or I work out, or I read, or I meditate, or I play music. You know, the thing is that a lot of times, even regular people, we don't want to feel our feelings. Feelings can be painful. Sometimes feelings come at us and we're like, oh, a glass of wine, that'll, you know, take the edge off. Like, a lot of that happens, right? A lot of, they're finding a lot of moms, you know, young moms, new moms drinking on a regular basis because they need to take the edge off.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a solution until it becomes a problem. Right. So, you know, feeling the feelings is hard. It's hard. It's like when you first sober up, you feel like you're literally like you have frostbite. Your whole body is frostbitten and you're thawing out. You're slowly thawing out and feelings are so intense. Like you feel all the feels and you have to feel your way through it. And that's, again, why my yoga practice is so helpful. I can do a lot of healing on my mat, mm-hmm. right? A lot of healing. You look at yoga, it's an art. You look at your yoga mat, it's an empty canvas. What are you going to paint on it, right?
Yeah, your magic carpet. I like that, man. What you said, magic carpet.
Totally.
Yeah, super cool. Yeah, because...
you haven't drank.
I know, and it's because of you.
And you got a good amount of time now.
Yeah, because like I was, since I met you, I was like, wow, that's really cool, because we went to Vegas last year together, and I was like, wow, they're going to Vegas, and they're not drinking. I'm like, wow. And then, I don't know, I just thought about...
We had a blast.
Yeah, you had so much fun, and... Yeah, you were leaving for the airport when we were just coming home.
I was like,
so shit-faced. And then, yeah, over the summer, I just drank a fuck ton, like, way too much. Mm-hmm. And it was just, like, yeah, wasting the whole next day and just being, like, not the best person I knew I could be. Mm-hmm. And I was just like... Fuck, I just called you up. And I'm like, I need help. help me do it. Yeah. Like, you're the only sober person I know.
And look at you, have like 80 days.
Yeah, it's 81 today.
81 days, which is huge.
Because I tried it before at the beginning of the year and I only made 30. And then you're like, okay, do 90.
Yeah.
Do 90 and then see what's up. And that's in 9 days.
Yeah, I know. And that's amazing.
And I, like,
and you probably feel clear and you have better energy and that you can get your shit done. Like, you have the energy to do your things because you're not like dragging around that hangover chain.
Hangover chain?
Yeah, it's like heavy.
I don't know. It's just super interesting. And I just didn't think, I was just like, 5 years with no alcohol is so long, let alone like, now it's
90 days.
Yeah, it's like, I could keep going. Yeah. I want to keep going, which is super weird. I didn't think that I would. Feel that way.
And you're so young too, right? So a lot of people that they think that like because they're in their 20s that's an acceptable thing is to drink, right? So it's like a lot of people it's just everywhere, right? You do anything.
Everywhere.
Barbecue, you go on a boat, you go camping, you go dirt biking, you go whatever. It's booze,
and just continuous
things, like, to do, to drink.
Well, yeah, I was just like, people just don't have one, they literally have like two cases full.
Yeah,
you know, like, you can't, I don't know, it's really funny when you don't drink. The kind of first couple of weeks we went to a birthday party and people are like, oh, you're not drinking? Like, why?
Yeah.
Like, people get weirded out about it.
It's so interesting, like, that the people that are weirded out about it are not the people that aren't drinking. It's the people that are drinking. They're like, oh, that's so strange.
Yeah.
How do you do it? Or why? Are you pregnant? Like,
People at work, they're just like, I had a dream. No, it was actually really funny. This girl, she's like, so I got really stoned last night. And she's like, and I just had thought about you. She's like, and then I thought you were pregnant because you weren't going to drink for 3 months. And she's like, I bet you that's her cover, that she's pregnant. And I'm like, oh my God, that would be funny. Because I'm like, oh no, I'm just cleansing or whatever, don't want to drink. And she's like, she's pregnant. She's no, that'd be my worst life. I'm not pregnant.
Yeah.
Ew. I don't know what else you can... Oh, I wanted to talk about Presley, so... You're talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to come up to the Caribou and see your wonderful studio in the summertime.
Yeah, we're gonna do a full moon ceremony.
Yeah, and then fucking shit went fucked.
Yeah, my daughter had a accident. Like, she was doing a science experiment for school that involved gunpowder, and basically the gunpowder was airborne in my house, but I didn't know it. And she lit the barbecue lighter and it blew up in the air, it happened so fast. Like, I was only 5 feet away from her, and I emptied the water cooler jug on her. I didn't know how bad anything was, because gunpowder, it's like a flash burn, it's crazy. And I saw she had no eyebrows. I'm like, oh my god, and I, you know, got her in the shower, and then my partner came and he ripped over and took us to Emerge, and they flew us to Children's. Like, they helicoptered us to BC Children's Hospital. That was on June 17th. It was bad. She had second degree burns, face, hands, arms, legs. She went in for her first burn bath, and my God, it was crazy. She came out, they bandaged her from head to toe. All she could do was open and close her eyes, and that's it. And she was 11 at the time, but it was like the craziest thing to go through ever. You know, like at first, when it first happened, I was super mad at God. I was so pissed off, right? Because I'm like, here I am for 6 fucking years. I'm working my ass off to amend my life and be a good person in every way. I felt like he was punishing me, like it was my bad karma from the way I lived my life in the past, and I was being punished. But of course, I see that it has nothing to do with it, that this is like her own path and her own journey, and I can only love and support her. Which the other interesting thing about it is that when Presley was a baby, like, I was not there for her. I was deep in my addiction, and I was not present, like, at all, right? And here I am, you know, my daughter is like a baby. She's in this hospital, bandaged from head to toe, can only open and close her eyes. I have to take her to the bathroom. I have to spoon feed her with a baby spoon because her mouth was so burnt she could only open and close it a little bit. And I have to feed her. I have to, like, she's essentially like this newborn. And I am a present, sober mother that's able to show up for her. And not only that, but it's like, you know, I think that God knew that I needed to get clean and sober when I did, because he probably knew this was going to happen to Presley if everything is already, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, like, he knew I was going to need a tribe of men and women that would be able to carry me through that. And at my studio, I constantly, for this, you know, over the year and a half or whatever, I have been telling, you know, the students and the tribe, like, you know, all we have to do is suit up and show up for each other, right? Like, be there for people when they need you. Like, and I never thought for a million years that it would be me the one that needed carrying, right? But they suited up and showed up for me, mm-hmm. and Presley, and yeah, it was incredible. Even the Vancouver Lano Club sent people to have AA meetings at the hospital for me so that I could keep my sobriety intact, right? Because, of course, like, if that was going to be a reason to relapse,
yeah,
right? But yeah.
But you didn't.
No, and I got through that. And you know, and that makes my life that much more, you know, my sobriety that much more valuable, because I wouldn't have been able to get through something like that if I was in my disease. I wouldn't have been able to be there for my kid, and there wouldn't have been one person there for us. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It just goes to show you, like, I can do all things sober. I can get through anything sober. I can walk through anything. As long as I have my sobriety, I have everything. Because if I don't have my sobriety, everything I love comes last. Right? So it's like, that has to be number one in my life.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And how's Presley now?
She's not the greatest because it's been 5 months since the accident. She's depressed. She was in bedridden for 2.5 months and indoors, can't be in natural sunlight. You know, she's got some scars that are pretty heavy duty, and it's hard to be 12 years old and going through your own stuff, right? Like, going through puberty and then to have all these other things happen. So it's going to be a lifelong thing. It's going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot of lessons for it. But like I said, you got to look for the message in the mess.
Yeah.
How do you find triumph in tragedy? You have to. You can't wallow in it. The poor me is, right? It's not going to change anything. What happened, and now all we can do from it is rise. And whether that takes a lifetime or a shorter amount of time, it doesn't matter. It's like, you know, fall down 10 times, get back up 11. Like, you just have to. You have no other way to get through it. You have to move through it, right? So, yeah, she has a great team of doctors at Children's, and you know, they're doing everything they can to minimize scarring, but it's mostly mental, right? PTSD,
right.
Depression, anxiety, like, she's afraid of everything now. Like, she's not the same kid for sure, right? But yeah. Hopefully she'll grow and help others, right? Hopefully she'll help other burn survivors, and she'll make her own impact in this world because of what happened to her, right?
She will, mm-hmm. For sure. Is there, like, anything, like, if somebody was listening right now and, like, they maybe think that they're struggling or mm-hmm. something, is reach there any out. Advice that you would give
yeah,
to them?
Reach out. Like, you're not alone. Like, look for somebody that has qualities that you look up to. Look for somebody that you think is doing life pretty badass and reach out to them, right? Like, that's it. Humans by nature want to help others. Mm-hmm. We're just not often given the opportunity to help because most of us hold all our shit in and don't talk about it, right? Like, open up. You have no idea, like, sharing your story with someone else. We have to show our scars so others know they can heal, right? Like, life is tricky. You just stay in your magic and, you know, stay in your own lane and keep your side of the street clean and be a good person.
Sweep
it up. Yeah.
Oh, well, I just want to take this time to just thank you because...
Oh, I love you.
Because you've been, honestly, if you've just been such an inspiration to me.
I know, we've had such good times together. Victoria Yoga Conference.
We're going to go to Costa Rica together.
That's right.
It's going to be dope.
And see, we met, like, through yoga and yeah, like, you sometimes meet those people that become part of your tribe and you can't imagine your life without them or what you ever did before them, right? Yeah. So yeah, stay
dope.
Open.
What's next for you?
Well, I'm gonna.
What are your big goals?
Big plan is to build a dream studio from the ground up in my town, like a J-Lo fucking studio.
Yes, yeah. I want to do that too.
Yeah, so that's the next goal and.
Like a J-Lo studio.
Yeah.
Don't tell them anything.
Yeah.
It's important. They'll steal it.
Yeah, so that's happening. And other than that, I'm just one day at a time. Just stay super present, right? Don't look back and don't get too far ahead because the present moment's all we got, right? And if you're not in the present moment, you're missing out on what's right here, right now.
Right? The only place where life truly exists.
Yes.
Right here, right now, baby. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, pimp yourself out. Where can people find you?
Yeah.
What if they all your shit?
Yeah.
Maybe talk about your BF's company if you want. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, well, you can find me on Facebook, Blissed Out Yoga and Fitness, Instagram, Blissed Out Yoga and Fitness. you can come up to the Caribou and come to the studio. My partner has a company called Canna Bliss, and it's a CBD oil company without the THC. So that's all on my website. I run trainings and retreats and with my best friend Kate Todd, who's on a retreat in Costa Rica right now. And life's pretty lit. And if you ever need help, if you're ever struggling, just private message me, Karen Peterson. Like, I'm always available. I am here if anybody ever needs anything at all. I always have an open door.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much. Okay, bye. Bye.
And
bye.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you guys have questions, feel free to email me at shannonpetersfitness.com. Find me on Instagram at queen.namaste or visit me on my website at www.queennamaste.com.